Minute 50 to go here in the third. Here's Ovechkin with a shot. He scores! And he ties Jaromir Jagr for third all time. That's goal 766.
That was Alexander Ovechkin scoring goal number 766, tying him for third place all time in NHL history, and underscoring the highly visible and incredibly pressurized place that he and other Russian players all find themselves in right now. So today, first, Emily Kaplan is here to explain how the hockey world has been uniquely impacted by the invasion of Ukraine. And then she tells us about a very different controversy between Jack Eichel and his old team, the Sabres, which all came to a head in Buffalo last night. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, March 11th. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Emily Kaplan, good to have you back on the show. Thank you for doing this, as always.
Thanks for having me, Pablo.
So we're going to get to your coverage from last night of Jack Eichel's homecoming in Buffalo after his divorce from the Sabres. He's a Vegas Golden Knight now, and there were all sorts of really interesting questions about medical care and who controls an athlete's body. But before we get there, I do want to start with the biggest story in the entire world right now, because for the sport you cover, Emily, the Russian invasion of Ukraine is not this abstract, far-off concept. It actually intersects with hockey more than pretty much any other North American sport. So how would you describe that dynamic as it's been so far?
Well, I guess, Pablo, it's important just for a little context of Russia and hockey. You know, Russian President Vladimir Putin has used sport to elevate his own status and unify his country, but his favorite team sport is undoubtedly hockey. He's been known to organize these social games with government officials and NHL stars like Pavel Bure and Slava Fedosov. These are former NHL stars, of course.
No, Emily, I mean, we've seen the videos of Putin scoring approximately 1 zillion goals in these games. He's wearing pads. He's playing the game. This is an example of how he projects Russian power and pride.
Absolutely. And, you know, these games, they sometimes become punchlines here in North America because we'll see the box scores and people in the stands say, oh, he scored 8 goals. And then the Kremlin official release will say, actually, he scored 10. But Putin and his government are also heavily involved in the Russian national team, as well as their professional league, the KHL, which is widely believed to be the world's second best hockey league. But many of the top players, if you're one of the best players in the world, you want to come play in the NHL because that's the best league in the world. And right now there's 41 Russian players in the NHL. They're some of the most visible Russians in North America right now. They're competing on a major stage every night. And most of those players have families back home in Russia, so they're really stressed by the situation.
And these are players who have either already played for the Russian national team or have clear aspirations to do so in the future, right?
Correct. And as we're going to talk about some of the reasons why they don't speak out or why they haven't been as public on this matter, you'll understand that there's implications that not only affect their career and their standing within the country, but also, you know, what could happen to their families and other ramifications like that.
And so if that's the backdrop, Emily, have you been hearing from Russian players about all of it?
Yes. So I talked to Dan Milstein, and he represents about 70% of the Russians in the NHL. And a little background on Dan, he was actually born in Ukraine, and he came to America at age 16 as a political refugee after the fall of the Soviet Union. So some of his clients want to speak freely on the situation in Ukraine, but they fear for their safety of their family back home. But it's kind of this paradox, because by remaining silent, they also feel judged by their American fan base, who many of those players believe don't really understand the intricacies or the nuances that they must deal with. And I spoke to one Russian player directly, and he explained it to me exactly like this. Right now, I'm in an impossible situation. And this impossible situation is affecting them on a really granular level. You know, Dan told me about some of the harassment his players have been dealing with, both in social media comments to them and their family. They're being called Nazis. They're getting booed on the ice. They're getting harassed on the streets. CCM, which is one of the major equipment giants, has said they're not going to feature any Russian players in any of their marketing ads or campaigns. We've seen Mass Mutual, which had a pretty lighthearted and fun commercial featuring Alex Ovechkin and Nicklas Backstrom. They've pulled that from the air. And players say that they don't feel like their contracts in the NHL now are in jeopardy, but there is some fear that it's going to be difficult to get visas going forward. And already Dan told me he's worried about his draft eligible clients, because there's NHL GMs and executives saying, I don't know if I can draft a Russian player next year. One, I don't know what his visa situation will be, if I'll be able to get him over here. But two, I'm worried about the fear of public backlash.
Those financial contractual consequences, Emily, I mean, that's not only a very serious thing, but it does feel like something that needs to be seen in the context that you just mentioned, which is these players do have family members back home in Russia that is complicating their calculation on how vocal to be about any of this.
So, Pablo, I think it's really notable that Artemi Panarin, the Rangers superstar and the most vocal critic of Vladimir Putin of anyone in the NHL historically, has not spoken up at all about this. And if listeners of this podcast, and I know you have loyal listeners, so they remember last year we did an episode about Artemi Panarin when he spoke up on behalf of Alexei Navalny, who was the Russian opposition leader. And there were severe consequences for Artemi when he did that. There was a hit piece that came out in Russia that alleged that he hit this 18-year-old girl. It was unsubstantiated, but he took a 2-week leave of absence from the team. And when you think about all of those consequences that happened the last time he spoke out, you see why perhaps he's being silent, as the New York Rangers, I should add, are having this complete resurgence and should be a playoff team that has hopes to win the Stanley Cup. There has been one Russian player, however, who has spoken out against Putin during all of this, and that's Nikita Zadorov. He's a defenseman for the Calgary Flames. And I've been told that after Nikita posted on his Instagram a message about no war, he received significant harassment.
And as for the corporate entity that is the NHL, what has their strategy been in terms of how to navigate all of these waters?
Well, first, on a team level and also a league level, these players who have reported harassment, the teams have upped their security to help protect those players. So that's very nice to hear. The NHL put out a statement basically condemning Russia's action and said it supported the Russian players. But the league did make some business decisions as well. They're not broadcasting any games on Russian TV. They're not doing any business with Russian business partners. They've shut down their media site over in Russia, which helps promote the game. Some teams have come out in support of Ukraine. We've seen the Winnipeg Jets invite a Ukrainian male chorus to perform their national anthem. Ottawa Senators owner Eugene Melnyk, who is the son of Ukrainian immigrants, said Wednesday that their national anthem of Ukraine will be played at home games the remainder of the rest of the season. We've seen the same happen at Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle. So there's small acts of support, but on a large level, the league is saying, we're condemning this and we're separating ourselves. And one other notable thing that happened, Pablo, is that the NHL this week severed its relationship with the KHL, the top league in Russia, and has significant ties to the Russian government. And the implications here are, it could be a lot more difficult now for NHL teams to sign Russian free agents. Now, if an NHL team has already drafted a Russian player and he's developing in that league, they're able to maintain that relationship and hopefully get him over here and see his development pass through. But in the future, it's going to be a lot harder to get Russian players over here.
And when you say that the KHL has significant ties to the Russian government, Emily, how close a connection are you talking about there?
In January 2020, right before the pandemic, I was able to go to Moscow to attend the KHL All-Star Game and report on that league. And I got to meet the commissioner, and it was great. We had this great conversation. And by the time I came home and wanted to put that article out, the commissioner was no longer in his post because he had been appointed by Vladimir Putin as a deputy prime minister and part of Putin's cabinet. So that's how closely linked the KHL and the government are.
And in terms of the overlap between hockey and the Russian government, Emily, the name that I always think of is Alex Ovechkin, the captain of the Washington Capitals. Incidentally, the guy who, as of this recording, still has his Instagram avatar, a photo of him with Vladimir Putin. And so what has Ovechkin said about Russia's invasion, and what have the last few weeks been like for him specifically?
Challenging is how I would describe his last few weeks. Ovi spoke publicly about the situation once, and he made a call for peace.
Obviously, it's a hard situation. I have lots of friends in Russia and Ukraine, and it's hard to see the war. Like, I hope soon it's going to be over and there's going to be peace in the whole world.
I actually think it was interesting that Ovi specifically said, I want no more war, and used the word war, because what I've heard from other Russians in the league is they're even tepid to mention that word because of laws back home that could threaten jail time for treason of spreading, quote, false narratives. Ovi's general manager, Brian McClellan, came out in support of Ovi, and he pretty much tried to describe to fans, he is facing pressure from all sides, and I believe it. Ovi's family is back home in Russia. They have relationships with Putin and the Russian government. I mean, Putin once gave Ovechkin a wedding gift. And Ovi famously helped spearhead this political campaign called Putin's Team in 2017. I know a lot of people are wondering about that Instagram photo. It's such a bad look. Why won't he just take it down? I was told that the Washington Capitals have asked Ovi to take it down. They've asked him to deactivate his Instagram account. And Ovi each time has told them, if I do both of those, I really feel like that is a sign back home that I am speaking out against Putin and I feel like my family is in danger. And the Washington Capitals have to respect that because that is how Ovi feels. And again, we don't understand a lot of these nuances and complexities back home.
Man, I mean, Emily, that is a very 21st century version of power, right? Of Instagram clout really mattering in a geopolitical conflict. And we should note, too, that the Washington Capitals organization basically acknowledged that complexity. They said that they condemn the invasion of Ukraine, but they also acknowledge the almost impossible situation that it's creating for Russian players and their families back home. And so I'm also just wondering what kind of feedback, what kind of pushback has Ovechkin been getting around the league from fans?
You know, I had a game in D.C. last week, Pablo, and I was interested just to see what the crowd would be like. There were a ton of Ovechkin jerseys. There was a Russian flag that was unfurled behind the goal after he scored, which was a very cathartic goal because in the games before that, you could tell he was really frustrated. And Ovi even admitted it was an important goal to him. Since then, the Capitals say that they have banned political flags, Ukrainian flags, Russian flags from being at games. On the road, he is getting booed. He's facing a ton of criticism, not just from players and people in the league and fans, but people outside it as well. You saw former Sabres goaltender Dominik Hasek, who grew up in what was then Czechoslovakia, which was under Soviet control. He goes on Twitter and calls Ovechkin a chicken shit after his statement. I was told that Hasek was kind of blown away by the feedback. English is his second language. He says he hasn't spoken English in a while and he just couldn't think of a better word. He just said chicken shit. But that shows just some of the scrutiny that Ovi faces because people know he has a platform and he has a voice and they expect more from him. At the same time, I've also talked to people of what is Ovi going to say and what is he going to do? And is anything he's going to say going to stop the war? And frankly, I don't think so.
And it's also worth mentioning, of course, that all of this is happening as Alexander Ovechkin is chasing Wayne Gretzky and a few others to become the all-time scoring leader in NHL history, right? I mean, as of this taping, he is tied in third place with Jaromír Jágr. Ovechkin scored his 765th and 766th goals on Tuesday night.
The linesman say no icing. Ovechkin put a bump on. Ovechkin steals and scores! Alex Ovechkin! Alex Ovechkin! On the way, he scores! Alex Ovechkin has tied Jaromír Jágr.
And so then he needs to pass Gordie Howe, who scored 801 goals all time, and then the great one, Wayne Gretzky, at 894. So what is the forecast from here as to Ovechkin maybe also being the guy whose name is atop the most famous record in hockey?
You know, Pablo, before all of this happened, everything was shaping up for Ovechkin to break this record by Wayne Gretzky, and the entire hockey world, frankly, was rooting for him to do it because we love to watch things that are historic and special. Ovi was having another monster season, and he is. He's showing no signs of slowing down at age 36. And at this point, you know, we always said the only way that Ovechkin wouldn't break it is if injuries slow him down or something like that. I think right now he's on pace to break it in about the 24-25 season. But now I wonder, is there a chance that Ovechkin doesn't break this record because of a situation with his visa or his contract? Is there a chance that because he's a Russian national, he won't be able to play in the NHL in the next 2-3 years? We don't know that right now, but I think that's on a lot of people's minds.
Wait, Emily, just to be very clear about this, because I've never heard of an example of something like this in sports history ever. Like, the guy who would break the most hallowed record in this sport might not be able to do so because of possibly World War III or something close to it.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it, but yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying.
All right, so after the break, Emily, I also want to wrap my head around your exclusive interview with the newest star in Vegas, Jack Eichel, and the homecoming that he had in Buffalo last night.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Emily, you were in Buffalo for the big Golden Knights Sabres game Thursday night, which Buffalo won 3-1. But the real story there was the homecoming that Jack Eichel got. And this was a frosty reception for a former star of the team from the crowd in Buffalo.
Here we go. The return of Jack Eichel in Buffalo is underway. Eyeball to eyeball with Tage Thompson. Eichel wins the battle. He has the puck. And you see already and hear already the boos are underway.
And it's a reception that stems from an especially bitter breakup that Eichel had with the Sabres over a dispute about his neck injury. It's a dispute that raised really big and serious questions about whether an athlete actually controls their own medical care, whether they actually control their own body. And you got this exclusive interview with Eichel before the game. What was he like?
First, I love talking to Jack Eichel. I find him to be one of the most honest players in the game. I remember there was a player media tour a couple years ago when he was in Buffalo, and I asked every player that came and sat down at my station, when was the last time you cried? And like every single player was like, this is such a dumb question. I'm not answering it.
I love that question.
Thank you. You would answer it. And you know who else answered it? Jack Eichel. And I remember he goes, I remember when I cried last. It was last week. I was on my laptop on YouTube watching videos of military families coming home and reconnecting with their families, and I was sobbing. It's like, Jack, thank you. And it was so authentic. And so sitting down with him now at age 25, you see this player who has come into his own. You know, he was a top pick whose career hasn't gone exactly how he wanted yet. He found individual success, but he was never able to carry a team. The Sabres had the longest playoff drought in the league, which is going to extend this year. And that clearly grated on him because he's just this passionate, again, authentic, honest guy, especially as a captain. And the way things ended in Buffalo was really bitter. So he got what he wanted. And sitting down with him, I just saw a guy who was reflective, who realizes this is a very important juncture in his career, and he's ready to make the most of the second chance.
What does it feel like to play for a team that has legitimate expectations to win a Stanley Cup this year?
It's a pretty awesome feeling when you get here, and you know, they don't set the bar at, you know, making the playoffs. They don't set the bar at winning the division. They set the bar at winning the Stanley Cup, and everything you do and everything that's done around here, from, you know, the medical staff to, you know, the equipment guys to the, you know, everyone's on the same page and knows that that's what the goal is at the end of the year, and they do everything to, you know, to give you the best chance to win and perform and worry about playing hockey, and, you know, you can't ask for anything more.
So before Jack Eichel ever got to Vegas, Emily, before he was drafted by the Sabres in 2015, before he languished there in a playoff drought for 6 years, before he ever injured his neck, which we'll obviously get to, where did he come from? What makes him a special player on the ice?
Well, first, Eichel's a kid from Massachusetts. He came up through the U.S. National Team Development Program, and then he played for Boston University, where he was only the second freshman ever to win the Hobie Baker Award, which is awarded to the top college hockey player in the country. So early on, scouts talked about him as this natural leader, a super competitive guy who could lift the guys around him. He's got a great wrist shot. I think he's known more for his vision and playmaking abilities, though. He debuted in Buffalo at age 19, and his rookie season, he was already leading the team in goals.
Eichel, full steam ahead, gets in over the Washington line and dragged it right through and took his shot. He scores! Jack Eichel! Oh, my! What a play! Coming soon to a theater near you, Sick Mitts, starring Jack Eichel.
And ahead of year three, Eichel signed this 8-year, $80 million deal that made him the highest paid player in franchise history. And at age 21, they named him the captain. So franchise centers, they don't grow on trees. I think in any other year, he would be drafted number one if it wasn't the Connor McDavid year. And this was a player that Buffalo was super excited to build its entire franchise around.
Yeah, the hype around him in Buffalo. What made him so good and so promising? And did they get the return on that investment?
The issue with Jack is that he's a super fiery, competitive guy, and he was finding individual success. He just didn't have the talent around him.
It's never easy to lose, and you have expectations every season, and you look for, you know, success both personally and as a team. And, you know, when we weren't able to find, you know, that team success, it was definitely tough at times.
And no matter how much he wanted to rile up his teammates, the truth was they never had a playoff caliber team. And I know that was very frustrating on him. He wanted it so bad and he wanted to win, but he just didn't have the right guys to pass to, or the right guys to defend, or the right guys in net.
You know, you're filtering out coaches and GMs, and it wore me out, and I'm sure it wore a lot of guys out. It's not easy. You can feel the pressure there, and you know, the pressure to have you know, success and win, and you know, when you're not able to do that, it definitely takes a toll on you.
And so for him, it was just a frustrating start to his career, I would say.
As for the injury that Jack Eichel suffered that basically started everything here, all the controversy, all of the complexity here, what happened?
So according to Jack, he started dealing with neck symptoms a few years ago, and he says it was more than just a maintenance thing. It wasn't necessarily something that was going to keep him out of the lineup, but he was dealing with it, getting treatment and playing through it. So he was getting some treatment. He thought he was healthy. Then COVID happened. We got the pause. And after that, it still was nagging him. And then he got injured in a game in Long Island.
Take a look at what happened to Jack Eichel there. He gets pushed up against the glass, and that's kind of a stiff neck there for sure. And
you know, obviously you get injured in Long Island, and I just remember being in a lot of pain after the game. It was a hard time taking my jersey off, my shoulder pads, and, you know, then you just kind of go through the process of trying to diagnose what the injury was, and, you know, that's sort of where it went from there.
And through that process, he sought a second opinion. At the time, he wasn't thinking about getting surgery at all. He didn't think surgery needed to be an option, but the second opinion doctor said otherwise.
And what was the diagnosis?
He has a herniated disc in his neck. And so as a player, you have the right to go see a second opinion doctor. And the second opinion doctor told Jack that he had two options with surgery. One is a fusion surgery, which is very common. Another is an artificial disc replacement surgery. It had never been done on an NHL player before. However, we have seen it in other sports like UFC. And the thing about ADR is we don't have a lot of long-term data on it. However, it's a much shorter period of recovery, and there's a much lesser chance that you'll need future surgeries later in life.
Okay, so there's this medical question about how to best treat this injury. When does the dispute and disagreement between Eichel and his employers, the Buffalo Sabres, over how to best do that, how does that emerge?
It came to a head this year. Eichel then dug his heels. He did all of the research and he said, the ADR, the artificial disc replacement surgery, is what I want. I've talked to all of these doctors. I've seen these specialists. Knowing my body and knowing that I'll have a lesser risk of future surgeries in life and knowing that I'll be able to get on the ice much quicker, this is what I want. And he told me that initially he thought that Buffalo was on board with that. And then their doctor dug their heels and said, no, this has never been done on an NHL player before. We don't want to assume the risk. We think a fusion surgery, where we have all of this data to back it up, that it's been successful for multiple players in the past, is the right way to go.
They were keen on, you know, me doing a fusion, and I didn't feel comfortable doing that. I had spoke to people who had fusions, and I had spoke to people who had the disc replacement. And I had spoke with a lot of doctors, and it was just, at that point, I felt like the best move for me would be to do the disc replacement. So that's sort of what I set my mind on. And, you know, Buffalo's opinion never really changed. You know, it was interesting because at the beginning, I thought they were more on board with the disc replacement. And then for whatever reason, things changed.
And both sides really dug their heels. Neither was willing to budge, to the point where they strip Eichel of his captaincy. They say he fails his physical. And the only path forward is for them to help facilitate a trade to a team that will allow Eichel to get this surgery.
And so in November, Emily, the Sabres finally relent and Jack Eichel gets sent to the Vegas Golden Knights. And what happened next for him?
Jack got the ADR surgery in November. He was back skating in December, cleared for contact about a month later than that, and 3 months later is back in game action. If he had gotten the fusion surgery, he would be sidelined for far longer than that. And we talked about a situation where he was risking missing this entire season.
And so Jack Eichel is clearly like bristling at the paternalism of his employer, who is saying, we know what's best for you. You're our asset here, to use the vocabulary of sports in the modern day. How did he describe what was ultimately the divorce from the Sabres in terms of just the emotional aspect of it?
As open and honest as Jack is, he's also a hockey player. And inherently, he is trained never to make the story about himself. And when I was talking to him, he did try to remain neutral as much as possible. But I could still tell that it hurt so much that when you read between the lines, you can tell he does not think that he was treated fairly at the end.
I was frustrated. If you think about the reason why you took a captaincy away from me, it was because I didn't agree with you medically. And then, you know, you basically told me not to come around for training camp. So at that point, it just felt like they were toying with me. So I was pretty over it.
I mean, we see disputes over how to best rest and recover and have medical procedures across sports, Emily, but we seldom see it as clearly and simultaneously as messily, referring to the drama you just described, as we did with Eichel. What does the NHL's collective bargaining agreement say about who actually has the final say over a dispute like this, which seems to be at the core of this particular story?
So the NHL CBA is very explicit. NHL teams have the final say over how players treat injuries. Now, after this situation with Eichel, a lot of people were up in arms saying, that's absurd. How can that be possible? Players should have the right to say what happens to their own bodies and their own futures, because again, these type of surgeries don't just affect a player in the time that they're under contract with a team, but for years later in their life, and they should be able to determine the best course of action. You know, I talked to the NHLPA about this and I said, is there a groundswell of support for change? And they said, unfortunately not. And basically, these type of things need to be brought to the negotiating table, and they're easiest when there are collective bargaining talks. We just signed a new CBA in the NHL. And because this is something that happens once every 8 years, or, you know, we really haven't seen many disputes quite as bombastic as Eichel's, there isn't this groundswell of support. You know, this was something that the NHL brought up in negotiations, I believe, and after the 2012-2013 lockout. And it was something where the owners were just not willing to budge on, and therefore the players didn't fight back. And in this past collective bargaining agreement talks, I was told that issue wasn't broached at all, because the biggest things they were dealing with at the time were return to play protocols with COVID, as well as participation in the Olympics. And those were the two things that the players were really digging their heels in.
And now Jack Eichel seems to be an example, Emily, of player empowerment, to use another term that modern sports has seen a lot of. Does he see it that way, though? Is he an advocate for player health now because of the way that he very publicly litigated his own personal matters?
You know, I asked him explicitly if he viewed himself as an advocate going forward. He said,
I don't know if I'd call myself an advocate. I would say maybe I'm an example. And I'm an example of somebody who, you know, went against, you know, what their team thought was best for them and stood up for what they wanted. And I mean, there was a baseball player who was the first guy to get a Tommy John, and, you know, you can go down the list of things like that. So hopefully it just opens a new door for players to deal with an injury if they have it.
That example was tested pretty early, though, because right after Jack Eichel got this ADR surgery in November, Tyler Johnson of the Chicago Blackhawks had a similar neck injury. And Jack Eichel and Tyler Johnson share an agent. Jack got on the phone with Tyler, and because he did all the research and he did all the homework, it was up to Jack to basically relay all this information to Tyler. And Tyler then got the artificial disc replacement surgery. I do believe one of the reasons the Chicago Blackhawks were willing to sign off on it so quickly is because Jack had already gotten it. But you'll see he's already making an impact in that area.
And now Jack Eichel's body is the best case for this procedure that he risked his whole career on. Basically, how has his season been like with Las Vegas as their newest star post-surgery?
Well, we have a very small sample size because he just debuted in February. I asked Jack if he was feeling close to 100%. He's like, I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there.
I'm not there yet. I think whenever you take as long of a break as I took off, it takes a little bit. You know, I'm just trying to stay patient through the process. It's a process, and if I could just keep getting better every game and start feeling more and more like the old Jack, I'll be happy.
He went nearly a year without playing in an NHL game, and surgery or no surgery, it just takes time to find your timing again and your footing. He did score his first goal with a third game with the team.
In front, all alone with Stevenson, back to Eichel, he scores! Jack Eichel, his first goal as a member of the Vegas Golden Knights, and he makes it 2-0.
He also got his first signature moment as a Golden Knight. He scored the game winner with 5.2 seconds left to secure a 2-1 much-needed win over the Ottawa Senators.
Theodore out top, around the horn for Eichel. It's passed down low, and Pacioretty's shot blocked. Now Eichel with a rush shot and scores! Jack Eichel with 5 seconds left!
And I say much needed win because the Vegas Golden Knights are like the closest thing we have to an NHL super team. They've gone out and got pretty much every big free agent available. Even getting Eichel was pretty eye-opening to people in the NHL. They're impatient to win. They feel their time is now. They're not at the top of the standings. They've dealt with a lot of injuries. They're going to need him at his best down the stretch.
And so, Emily, how do the Sabres feel about all of this now that this is in the rearview mirror?
So Pablo, on Thursday before this very big game, me and the rest of the ESPN broadcast crew met with GM Kevin Adams of the Buffalo Sabres, and he just wanted to get his perspective out there. One thing he wanted to stress was how challenging this was as an organization. You know, even before the medical dispute, the Sabres got word from Jack Eichel that he wasn't happy with the direction of the franchise and wanted to get traded. And then Kevin Adams also wanted to defend his team doctor. His name is Dr. Cappuccino. He's been doing this a very long time. And Dr. Cappuccino has actually done a lot of artificial disc replacement surgeries. He's not adverse to the surgery at all. He just didn't think and didn't believe that that surgery would hold up to the physicality of hockey. One other thing Kevin Adams said is as they tried to trade Jack Eichel to all these different teams, he's never said it publicly, but there were quite a few teams who also did not feel comfortable letting Jack get this artificial disc replacement surgery, which handcuffed their options. Ultimately, though, they're happy with the outcome of the trade. Kevin said that he's happy for Jack, that he's healthy and back on the ice again, and they're super excited about two of the key players they got back. One is Peyton Krebs, and the other is Alex Tuch. And the best thing about Tuch is that he is from Western New York, born and bred a Buffalo Sabres fan. And as they look to this next chapter, what they really want to focus on is players who want to be there.
And those born and bred Sabres fans, Emily, they ended up happy on Thursday night because they won 3-1. Jack Eichel got shut out, and Peyton Krebs and Alex Tuch, the two guys you just mentioned there, the two guys who Eichel was traded for, they both scored for Buffalo. And so now I'm just curious about the lasting effects of this whole messy divorce. What are they ultimately going to be?
I think there's a lot of raw feelings still, a lot of raw emotions. I think over time, we'll be able to look at this situation with a little more empathy, with a little more clarity, and just see this was a player that didn't fit within this franchise at this specific time. But I do believe that there's a lot of people in Buffalo who feel like he quit on them, that he didn't want to be with his team anymore, that he was trying to force his way out. And for a fan base that is so passionate about his team, that's had so much struggles lately, they just want a guy that wants to be there.
Emily Kaplan, thank you for being here on ESPN Daily.
Thanks for talking pucks with me, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Bradford Craig, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and congrats to Chris and Katie and their cats, Gus and Bernie, and Aaron Fail. Special thanks this week to Andrea Soto, Christian Gardner, Abu Kamara, and Jackson Ogilo. I'll talk to you Monday.